Hello, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Ben, bringing you this week's Sports Illustrated magazine. In today's program, we will read the cover story, Jaden Daniels, the man saving football in D.C. I'll also be covering an article about Alexander Ovechkin achieving a new goals title in his 20th season, as well as an article about franchises doing whatever they can to keep their players healthy. There's a few other articles I'll be covering as well, so please enjoy the broadcast. October's cover story, Jaden Daniels. The man saving football in D.C. finds his time and attention in high demand, but the 2024 Offensive Rookie of the Year wants to be in full control of his narrative, and his agent, whom he calls Mom, is there to make sure it happens. By Connor Orr. When Jaden Daniels was a little kid, he'd get invited to sleepovers at friends' houses, and the evening would follow a familiar script. His mom, Regina Jackson, remembers always getting her momentary respite interrupted by a phone call to pick him up before bedtime, with the additional request that everyone at the sleepover could come and stay at his house instead. They just wanted to be at home, Jackson says, now of her kids. Jaden's sister Bianca is a year older. They were comfortable. She tells a story to back up a central point. Jaden, now 24, was and still is very much a homebody. This is further evidenced by the fact that outside of the upsizing of his bed, his childhood bedroom in San Bernardino, California, remains largely untouched. Laying around are letters of interest from colleges all over the country, old cleats that don't fit anymore, ribbons from track and field meets, conference awards from his days at LSU. The plain piece of paper hanging over the doorframe on which Daniels wrote and rewrote about his intention to play in the NFL. A lucent 2024 validated that ambition. Daniels followed a Heisman Trophy win as LSU's quarterback in December 2023 by gifting the Washington football franchise its best season since the Gulf War. Daniels was born 9 years after the Commanders last posted more than 10 wins in a season. He starred in what was arguably the signature moment of the season, a Week 8 Hail Mary against the Bears that, even by Hail Mary standards, took on a deeply religious meaning with the way it sent tens of thousands of people into delirious rapture and put his club on a path toward the playoffs. His next act was quarterbacking a 45-31 divisional round win over the Lions in one of the biggest postseason upsets in the last decade. He won the AP Offensive Rookie of the Year award. He finished 7th in MVP voting, just behind Patrick Mahomes. He made the Pro Bowl, and perhaps the biggest headline for someone who prefers being at home, he boarded a flight to Paris this offseason and toured France for a few days, meeting up with the football club Paris Saint-Germain. "This was my first time out of the country," he says in August, just a few minutes before driving into the Commanders' practice facility for some off-day work. Long flights from California all the way to Paris. While he has remained remarkably in the moment, he has clearly had some time to consider how he wants his life to go from here. Calling it a star rise is a bit of a misnomer because the creation of an actual star is bound by science. We can quantify and understand what leads to the final radiant burst of energy. But in the NFL, the entire star-making enterprise can feel like riding alongside a New York City delivery cyclist weaving through the streets of the Upper West Side. There is a moment each year when a player seems to become less himself and more of a product of the NFL's all-encompassing algorithm of content. That moment does not always feel conscious or even consented to. At the very least, it can be disorienting. When people asked about his own concept of personal power heading into his second NFL season, though Daniel's response is both incredibly thoughtful and ambitious, "I would just say the concept of power is more so just being able to control your own narrative," he says, "and really do what you want to do and tell your story." This is another reason why the story of Jaden as a young kid and the comfort he felt at home is important, because in his quest to do the NFL his own way, in maybe the greatest flex of his personal power, he made the decision to have his mother become an instrumental part of the process. Regina is not just his mom, after all, but an NFLPA certified agent who co-represents Daniels with Ron Butler of Agency One Sports. She's also the co-founder of a collective called Athletes in Control, which she says has 10 concurrent clients who have sought guidance in the nebulous world of NIL, and the spillover into professional football. She was also on the trip to Paris. It makes sense that the person Daniel has helping protect his narrative is the one who understands him better than anyone else. Jackson is by far the highest profile example of a parent taking on an official, licensed role in their child's business and on-field interests in NFL history. Felicia Jones, the mother of Lamar Jackson, is famously the Ravens quarterback's most trusted consigliere, but is not an NFLPA certified agent, which prevents her from having active contracts with an NFL team. If this all goes the way the family is expecting, she will not be the last. This is a life that chose us. Regina is talking about how the family arrived here. The past year has been both surprising and unsurprising. When anyone tries to challenge an orthodoxy, there is pushback, even if those people feel they did not really have a choice. This would seem, in the NFL, to be especially true for a woman and a mother trying to cross the cement barrier into a negotiation room that may one day contain the best football player in the world. Jackson has made candid appearances on podcasts and docuseries, with most of what she said being subject to the typical internet shredder, such as her thoughts on why she feels protective over Jaden in his dating life. However, she has always been backed by the endorsement of her son, who once told the Boardroom podcast that nothing gets past my mama. She reads people, she doesn't want to put people around me that she doesn't feel will benefit me. Says Daniels, my mom is an agent. I have an agent, Ron Butler, but my mom is a big part of the team. She was going to be a big part regardless, because that's my mom and my family in general. His father, Javon Daniels, who played football at Washington and Iowa State, has also been instrumental in shaping his Burgoyne career. And Jaden also talks about his reverence for his grandparents. The people close to me, they know who I am. They know how I operate, he says. So why not have somebody around that knows me for 24 years of my life and knows what I can do and just have honest conversations with them? And then obviously their opinions matter a lot. Jackson has opinions too, but she wants to make one thing clear, especially after being so visible in Jaden's journey through the perilous world of the NIL and now his NFL career. I don't want the spotlight, she says. I hate it, to be honest with you, but I know that's what comes with it. And there is some good that I can share there to get my story out, because I do want to influence women, and not just women, but mothers and fathers that maybe thought they could do it or maybe don't want to. But we have to still be those instillers of life lessons in these kids. There's a lot of things that have happened in this world that we've been so taken aback by. How did this happen? Why is this happening? I think we need to be that pillar by asking our kids more stuff. We're in a generation where these kids don't speak, they don't talk, so we have to be those parents to say, are you good? And then we can't just say, okay, they're good. We have to be like, no, let's talk this through. What's going on? Regina has an undergraduate degree in business administration and two masters, one in public health administration and the other with a focus on entrepreneurship, a path she started when Jaden was very young. She says she would take 20 units per quarter out of a desire to level up for her kids, while still taking them out for Dippin' Dots after track practice. She served as treasurer and president of Jaden's Pop Warner team. She found her background useful when all of a sudden she started working on a marketing agreement with a car dealership for Jaden when he was in college at Arizona State. Daniel spent 3 seasons there before transferring to LSU. They came setting up Jaden's LLC, making sure his entity structures were correct, aligning his bank accounts. From there, it felt like a matter of personal responsibility to further her education when the lawlessness of payment for college athletes kept everyone up at night. Lately, her time has been spent collaborating on the Jaden Daniels Foundation, which orchestrated a back-to-school giveaway in San Bernardino in July. But in a larger sense, Jackson is essential in Daniel's orbit because she can understand him in a way others cannot, knowing when to push him towards certain opportunities, even if he may not feel like it in the moment. She can pick up on little things. There's times where I might have to kick people out and just have a conversation with her, Daniel says. Like, hey, let's try to wrap this thing up as fast as possible. I'm tired. For sure, there's times where we kind of butt heads, but she has to ask me to do some of this stuff that I don't want to do. She always has my best interest at heart. It's a choice that, because of NIL, is now present in the lives of parents who fear becoming the victim of a predatory scheme. Fox agents posing as players without their permission, getting charged 20% on deals, finding themselves like the family of quarterback Nico Imaleva, losing the most high-profile game of contractual chicken in the NIL era after painfully misunderstanding his market, now at UCLA. Imaleva tried to rework his NIL deal at Tennessee, which cost him his starting job with the Vols. All of it represents kind of simultaneous pull to take charge and protect the kid and push away, fearing that getting involved amounts to some sort of malpractice. Back in 2022, Regina told Jaden, "One day I'm going to represent you." In September 2024, she was officially notified she passed the NFLPA agent certification exam. Jackson says she now gets compared to the character Tasha Mack from The Game, a TV show about a mother of a superstar quarterback who starts her own management firm. The development has Daniels in a position where the hermit in him, the one who would like to control his own narrative and keep everything in a neat little buckets, gets challenged a bit. His ultimate preference would be that every football-adjacent conversation remains strictly about football. I like to really just be low-key and stay out of the way and keep people guessing of my next move, he says. He generally dislikes talking about his personal life, which includes discussions about his mom. As I grew up, more people became more accustomed to knowing who my family was, my mom and my dad, and stuff like that. They're very curious, Jaden says. And obviously, now my mom's a certified agent, so they want to ask me these questions. And I try to not really talk about her that much because at the end of the day, she's my mom. I wanted to keep that private and make sure she's always straight with people trying to come after me and wanting to see me fail or see me succeed. And they might go after her, so I really don't try to talk about her that much. His instinct to protect is more obvious behind the scenes, Regina says, leading to a strange parenthood moment as he began repeating aphorisms to her that she once used to soothe and motivate him. If there is some unnecessary criticism, an inappropriate comment on social media, or some invasive moment, he steps in. I have to tell Jaden that you can't fight all your mom's battles because your voice is very powerful, she says. We have to be able to pick and choose when we use that voice. The refrain, "Mom, we don't fold. We don't back down." On draft night this year, Kimberly Williams was surrounded by charts, ones with team rosters and others with the best players at each of the positions at which any of her prospective NFL clients was playing. Around her were several assistants who were responsible for updating one of the said charts, and nearly everyone was manning one of the five different cell phones used to contact NFL general managers and scouts. Williams has been an NFLPA certified agent since 2023, having gone through the preparation process with Jackson. One of the players she was fielding information about that night in April was her son, Josh, a running back from LSU who would sign as an undrafted free agent with the Buccaneers. Josh is also her client, which meant that she eventually found out he was signing with Tampa Bay before he did. I definitely shed some tears and definitely was a mom in that perspective, she says. Definitely happy tears. Williams' husband, Jermaine Williams, played running back in the NFL from 1998 to 2001, and his post-career journey shaped Kimberly's adaptness at combing through endless amounts of dense paperwork, credits to go back to school, health insurance reimbursements, an HSA plan, an NFL-sponsored 401k plan, disability annuities throughout their lives. There were so many documents to sign, and she always found herself taking a moment to say, "Let's actually read what this says." She worked on government contracts and is also a successful real estate broker. This kind of person who will dive into a deal and expose a family member taking advantage of an elderly relative, something she's actually done. So one afternoon back in 2023, with the rest of her family away on a trip, Williams hopped on an NFLPA call and collected the requisite study material to begin a short prep session for her entrance exam. She took the test on a Monday, having told no one, and 2 months later found out she was certified. She simply dropped a screenshot of the acceptance letter into the family group chat. Everyone was like, "Wait a minute, what?" She says, laughing. "Call us?" She had no intention of representing Josh, but through word of mouth, had already amassed a small stable of clients while her son was still in college. According to NFLPA records, Williams has negotiated 5 NFL contracts. NFLPA agents must negotiate at least one deal in their first 3 years of certification in order to maintain active status. She also represents clients in both the Canadian Football League and the United Football League. Her advantage, Williams says, is her status as a mother. She can relate to parents in meetings differently, talking nostalgically about the journey from the perspective of someone who has seen her own kid swallowed up by a gigantic football pads in Pop Warner, now preparing for a life of professional football, along with Jackson and Heather Van Norman, the mother of 3-time Pro Bowler Odell Beckham Jr. The group makes up a small but expanding pool of prospective agents who are hoping to normalize the transition and empower others to do the same. Both Jackson and Williams say they have received numerous calls and direct messages from parents inquiring about the process. "I think that it makes us elite in some sense because we could just basically get eye to eye with these parents," Williams says. As Williams was interviewing possible agents for her son, she heard conflicting ideas and at times struggled to get responses back. Her sense after gaining her certification was that some agents don't care about the players who are not potential early round picks. They are not worth all the granular work that goes into ensuring that every minute need is met. And for Williams, that meant keeping up with Josh's physical therapy and training through the pre-draft process, securing transportation to rookie minicamps, getting him back home from break, ordering food, coordinating laundry, making sure he had the correct accommodations, and most importantly, checking in on his mental health the way only a mother could, scanning for those moments imperceptible to others where a red flag may go off. In this way, Williams, Jackson, and Daniels sound particularly aligned. By taking on an active role, according to both mothers, their children have the ability to be more of their authentic selves, exactly what Jaden himself hopes for in the coming months and years of his career. It's less about control, the way they explain it, and more about filtering out the invasive and toothiness of the business side that would bring them back to their childhood home as anything but the person who left. And that is something that tends to make parents in this position more relentless. "Coaches and GMs look at us as just a mom," says Williams, "but they don't realize that we are the ones they should be worried about." Jin says that Regina still calls him every day if he doesn't check in first. She gives him space. Jaden says they do not see each other much during the offseason, but there will still be times when he slips off into a nap and wakes up to 5 notifications. "I'll always call back," he says. That dynamic is something that other people within the game might not understand. Ask active NFL agents who are not also parents of NFL players, and they will likely say that the idea of representing a child is too personal and could lead to emotional mistakes. They will bring up someone like Deion Sanders, whose pre-draft hubris and advice likely cost his son, Shadir, a few rounds. Ask parents of non-professional athletes, and they might say that such involvement in a kid's career could impede their process of becoming independent, that everyone must struggle and must experience the worst of the world for themselves. Ask parents of athletes who have been hoodwinked by NIL collectives, coaches, agents, and other parents, basically anyone, and the response would be entirely different. The idea of turning over a child yet again to someone or something that they are not 100% sure is functioning in their best interest is beyond unconscionable. The life of a sports parent is, after all, the art of holding on until the very moment when letting go is an obvious necessity. Like a splatter painting, it's messy and interpreting it is completely dependent on personal experience, on perspective, on personal psyche and makeup, on true goals expressed or otherwise. In the case of Jaden and Regina, power comes from being so successful that it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. That type of power can be shared and familiar. It can change the way framework looks like. And if that's what Daniels ultimately wants, because who is really going to tell that man saving football in DC anything different? Power becomes turning to look at everything else changing faster than one thinks is possible, and still getting that feeling of walking into the childhood bedroom where you were once, and maybe always will be, comfortable. The next article is on Alexander Ovechkin getting a new goals title. In his 20th season, the Great Eight surpassed the Great One for the NHL goals record, once thought to be an untouchable feat. Now the three-time MVP enters what could be his final year with the same blend of strength and skill that has defined his career. There he was on the power play, at the top of the faceoff circle, with the puck loaded on the blade of his stick, a sight so many opponents have come to fear. True to form, Alexander Ovechkin blistered a wrist shot past the right blocker of Islanders goalie Ilya Sorokin and into the net. The NHL career goal record, 895, was Ovechkin's, with the reigning goal-scoring king Wayne Gretzky there to witness it. The April 6th game was paused for 25 minutes as the Washington Capitol received the full royal treatment. A standing ovation from the opposing crowd, a blue carpet rollout on the ice, flowers, remarks from the Great One himself, and chants of Ovi, Ovi, Ovi. When Ovechkin returned to DC, his team gifted him a Rolex, a 6-foot sculpture, and a golden hockey stick. The mid-game celebration felt earned, not gaudy, a testament to Ovechkin's enduring status in the hockey world. The Russian power forward entered the league at a time of flux. The 2004-2005 lockout had just ended. The neutral zone trap had been done away with. The two-line pass rule abolished. The NHL had decidedly wanted to move away from enforcers and enter an era defined by speed and skill. In Ovechkin, the league found the perfect player to bridge its old-school roots with its new-school future. At 6'3 and 238 pounds, Ovechkin has never been afraid of contact, ranking in at the league's top 20 in total hits in 9 of his first 15 NHL seasons. His brute force comes out in his slap shot too, which he used in 2018 to become the first forward to win the league's hardest shot competition since 02. When the hockey gods mixed that brawn with endurance and skill, they created an unstoppable force that remains unmatched. The third article for this broadcast is The Game Between the Games, written by Tom Verducci. As injuries cost teams hundreds of millions of dollars every year, major league franchises are doing everything they can to keep players healthy, using techniques that are both cutting edge and old school. Before he goes out to pitch, an exercise that will place his left elbow under the same stress as holding up a 55-pound weight every time he throws the ball, Robbie Ray of the Giants will go to the training room to activate cellular signaling pathways in his body with the proper voltage from a pulsed electromagnetic field. The process is like fixing a wonky car battery, with one obvious exception. There are no cables, wires, or prongs. A therapist turns on a machine called Electrons Plus. It is about the size of a bread box, has one dial, and costs about $20,000. The machine emits a pulsed electromagnetic current that runs into the therapist, who transmits the current to Ray through the touch of the therapist's hand. The process is known as a pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, or PEMF. I use that to kind of get the muscles firing, Ray says, to get my shoulder, my triceps, everything in the area, like, turned on before I go out to throw. Once he hits the bullpen for his warm-up, Ray will throw a weighted ball into trampolines, just to get some blood flow, he says. In a typical start, he will throw 95 pitches, including an average of 48 four-seam fastballs at 93.6 mph. Each one stressing his surgically repaired left elbow, as do few human movements. When his work is over, he will return to the training room where a physical therapist inserts thin, solid needles into his shoulder muscles or any other area of concern to release muscular tension. The process is known as dry needling, which, unlike acupuncture, a traditional Chinese practice that focuses on energy flow, is based on Western musculoskeletal medicine. We also have a Japanese trainer that uses a microcurrent box that I really think helps out a lot, says Ray, referring to electrotherapy, which uses a microcurrent in waveforms to mimic the body's own bioelectric activity to help tissue repair. It helps wherever. It helps with my back. It helps with my shoulder. It improves the tissue quality. Ray is 33 years old and a 2021 CY Young Award winner. When he was drafted in the 12th round in 2010, he was a 185-pound high school teenager throwing in the high 80s. 2 years ago, 23 pounds heavier and throwing 94 miles per hour, he underwent Tommy John surgery to repair the ulnar collateral ligament in his elbow. The recovery from that surgery sent Ray down a new path in terms of arm and shoulder care. As a young player, I'd wake up and throw, Ray says. When you're young, you don't feel like you need it, right? You wake up, you do a couple arm swings, and you head out and you throw. But as I've gotten older, it takes time to warm up. Going through the rehab process, there's so much focus on shoulder stability and shoulder maintenance that you don't necessarily do during the season. And when things are going good, you don't really think about it. And so for me, that's what changed. I took my rehab shoulder program and I stuck with it even throughout the season. And you know, I think it's helped me bounce back. By late August, Ray was tied for the major league lead with 27 starts and had thrown more four-seam fastballs than every pitcher, with the exception of Brewers' Freddie Peralta and Blue Jays' Kevin Gausman. Two of his three best fastball seasons have come with the post-surgical maintenance program, a .167 batting average allowed last year and a .197 this year. Before and after games, an unseen war rages within Major League Baseball that may decide playoff berths as surely as clutch hits. It is the battle to keep players healthy. You're listening to the October issue of Sports Illustrated on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Ben. Thanks for listening. The undiscovered country is being perfect at limiting and creating those minimal amounts of injuries, says Yankees Senior Vice President and GM Brian Cashman, and being in a knowledge position to actually avoid and steer clear of injuries that are on the horizon. It's like the Titanic going towards an iceberg. Being in a position to see the iceberg coming and steer clear safely to avoid injury is everybody's intent. Every franchise has been adding trainers, sports scientists, physical therapists, health practitioners, and other performance experts to provide an expanding menu of modalities to prevent injuries. As with most resources, the Dodgers and Yankees are leading the way. The Dodgers' traveling party grew so large that Los Angeles became the first team to travel with two airplanes, one for the players and one for coaches and support personnel. The team also renovated its home clubhouse in the past offseason to build a three-story structure underneath the lower bowl of Dodger Stadium. It stretches from the third base dugout to left field foul pole and accommodates enhanced and connected training rooms and weight rooms. Similarly, last year, the Yankees renovated their clubhouse to include a sauna, steam room, hyperbaric tanks, pools, ice baths, a dining area dubbed the Pinstripe Diner, and urinals with sensors that measure hydration by turning green, yellow, or red. The Yankees cut their cost of injured players from an MLB high of $82 million in 2023 to $49 million in 2024 when they won the American League pennant. I don't have a specific number, Cashman says, but we've added to our athletic training ranks, we've added to our strength and conditioning ranks, we've added to our manual therapist and physical therapist. To be quite honest, it's still not enough. If you compare the personnel to support of a typical 26-man roster, it probably does not match up with an NBA roster and the personnel they have to support a smaller roster. Our intention is to have a menu of options available to keep our athletes at peak performance and healthy at all times. We wish we could have a magic wand and be able to provide even more than we already do. To attempt to fulfill the critical mission of keeping players healthy, teams are increasingly turning to high-tech means. In the 1960s, Aubrey Gatewood of the Angels, trying to pitch through bone chips in his elbow, would soak the elbow in ice for 2 minutes and then in a whirlpool bath for 5 minutes. He repeated the routine 4 times a day. Hall of Famer Sandy Koufax popularized the use of ice in his final two seasons. In 1965 and 66, before retiring due to the pain of an arthritic elbow, after starts, the Dodgers lefty would slip his left arm into a rubber sleeve and soak his elbow in a tub of ice. He also took a cortisone shot before every start, down pain pills that he said made him high half the time in ball games, and had his arm massaged before and after every start. Koufax retired at 30. Don Drysdale, his Hall of Fame teammate, retired 2 weeks after he turned 33, also due to arm pain. Drysdale also iced his arm after every game, though without the sleeve Koufax used. He would also hold his hands over his head while a trainer squeezed the blood out of his fingers and into his general circulation. The trainer also kneaded Drysdale's upper arm for 15 minutes to press the blood flow out of that area. In 1969, Dodgers allowed Drysdale to throw a complete game on 3 days of rest, even though they had an 11-0 lead. After three innings, he had recently been on the injured list. With such pain in his right shoulder, he contemplated retiring. Four starts later, with the pain so bad he had trouble sleeping, Drysdale did quit. Hall of Famer Nolan Ryan, taking advice from a hunting friend from Texas, used rattlesnake oil in the 1970s to combat soreness, even to treat a pulled groin muscle. "You gut the rattlesnake and boil the oil," Ryan once told a reporter. "You'd be surprised how much oil you get out of a 3 or 4 year old rattler." Similarly, Reds right-hander Jose Rijo, the ace of the 1990 World Series champions, rubbed snake oil sent by his mother from the Dominican Republic on his arm and shoulder before every game. He kept the oil on the top shelf of his locker and in an old rum bottle, with the skin of the snake congealed on the bottom. "A lot of people think it's voodoo, but it really works," Rijo once explained. "The snake oil relaxes the ligament." Snake oil has been replaced by PEMF, dry needling, Japanese electrotherapy, and assorted other modalities such as contrast therapy, which is the practice of alternating between hot and cold immersion, either in tubs or with compresses. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy, in which the player breathes 100% oxygen in the pressurized chamber to increase oxygen concentration in the bloodstream to promote healing of damaged tissue. Cubs pitcher Matthew Boyd has a tank at home and uses the team tank on the road. "I use that one a lot," Boyd says. "We have a PEMF machine, and we've got a few different machines that use magnets and help tune your body or focus on muscles recovery or sleep. We have such a demanding schedule that if you can find little ways to win in the margins, you'll do it." Soft tissue massage, which focuses on manipulating muscles, tendons, and ligaments to relieve pain. Cupping, an ancient therapy in which cups create a vacuum to increase blood flow to a targeted area. Scraping, in which a therapist improves circulation by pressing and scraping the skin with a smooth-edged tool. Neuromuscular electric stimulation, a recovery therapy that uses waveform design to contract muscles without causing fatigue. Blood flow restriction training, BFR, which uses cuffs or bands to improve recovery and endurance. Red light therapy, which uses low levels of red light to boost blood circulation and decrease inflammation. Pitchers with their days off and stress on the arm tend to be the strongest proponents of multiple modalities. Drew Rasmussen of the Rays, a first-time All-Star this year after three elbow surgeries, uses red light therapy, PEMF, acupuncture, and dry needling. The Astros' Hunter Brown is a proponent of the BFR waveform soft tissue massage and contrast therapy. Red Sox ace Garrett Crochet likes dry needling and soft tissue massage. The Tigers' Casey Mize prefers dry needling and PEMF, but not everyone is a fan of advanced modalities. "They don't work," says Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw. "It's a placebo effect." Kershaw then reconsiders and says, that's probably too blanket of a statement. I think there's some there that work. Ultimately, though, I think it's about how you move, how you recover, how you do things to make your body in a good position. Kershaw, who through late August had a 3.13 ERA in 16 starts at age 37, is a big believer in weight training. "Our strength training guys have really helped me kind of see what I need to work on and get better at," he says. some things are inevitable, like having your shoulder hurt or your foot blow out or things like that. But my hips and my back have never felt better. I don't wake up feeling stiff in my back and hips. You don't have to go in there and kill yourself, but you got to get in there and reposition your body in a way that you feel good the next day. Pitching is inherently dangerous. The moment of peak stress occurs as the pitcher crocks his arm shortly before maximum external rotation. To prevent the arm from too much of that, an opposite and equal internal force called varus torque is experienced in the elbow. Glenn Fleissig, the director of the biomechanics research in the American Sports Medicine Institute, has calculated the varus torque at the moment to be the equivalent of holding a 55-pound weight. Varus torque is a key barometer to pitching health. A study by Fleissig, released in July and funded by the MLB following 305 professional pitchers from 2015 to 2017, 31 of the pitchers needed elbow surgery. It found higher varus torque was associated with greater risk of UCL surgery. A 2019 study published by the Journal of Athletic Training found the higher velocity did not necessarily indicate higher varus torque. There are too many variables, but that the risk was strongly associated within an individual pitcher. That is, throwing hard is not necessarily a risk, but adding velocity is a risk. A 2017 study found that fastballs and sliders created 8 to 9% more varus torque than changeups. Based on such research, it is clear that pitchers today put themselves at more risk by chasing more velocity and spin. Sliders and sweepers went up every year from 2014 to 2024. Changeups have declined 5 straight years. Injuries are a billion-dollar problem for the MLB. Last year, teams paid $1.097 billion to players on the injured list, or 21 cents of every dollar spent on players. The Rangers sunk the most money into the injured players last season, $98 million, or 43% of their payroll. They dropped from 2023 world champions to 78-84. Pitchers account for 50% of roster spots, but 63% of all injured players, 390 of 620 trips to the IL last year, and 63% of the money spent on players unable to play, $691 million. Still, despite what often is described as an injury epidemic in baseball, especially with elbow injuries for pitchers, the plethora of modalities and changes in pitcher usage are reducing the rate of injuries. Injured list placement from day 2 of the regular season to day 99 and season injured from roughly the first half have declined 4 straight years, with an overall drop of 18% since 2022. Meanwhile, as pitching grows more intense, teams are cutting back on pitchers workload while giving them more rest. From 2015 to 2025, pitchers per start declined, while starts with 5 days or more of rest increased. At the same time, the average fastball velocity has jumped by 1.4 miles per hour over the past decade, and the game's elite are throwing harder than ever. There was 53 pitches clocked at 99 miles per hour or more at the All-Star game this year, up more than 650% from 6 years ago. I'd say the modalities are more important than they have ever been, says Boyd, who averages 93.2 miles per hour on his fastball. Just because guys are going out there, maxing out, throwing top velo in high revs more frequently than ever. I think about when I get called up and I was watching Justin Verlander 10 years ago, and he's waiting until the 7th, 8th, or 9th to let it rip. And now those guys are bringing out A stuff from pitch 1. And it's not just one guy, it's everybody, you know, except me. So I'd say that stuff is definitely more important, and your training is different. The picture is different than it was 10 years ago. It's different than it was 20 years ago. Because of that, you kind of have to adapt, and a lot more of the modalities definitely help. You know, try to get the battery pack to 100 as fast as you can. It helps, says Mize, who underwent Tommy John surgery in 2022 and made his first All-Star team this year. I talk about this a lot. It seems like some of the most skillful players are the ones that are the most healthy, because you can practice the skill when you're healthy, right? You can't practice the skill when you're not right. It's like, I can't work on a splitter if I'm in an arm brace. So health and skill, they kind of go hand in hand. Koufax's ice routine fell out of favor in baseball years ago. That's not to say in a cutting edge world of science and technology that there still isn't room for an old school ideas. For instance, Padres reliever Jason Adam, who nearly quit baseball while undergoing four elbow surgeries before reaching the major leagues, goes very low-tech when it comes to his modalities of choice. "I do stuff like somersaults," says Adam, whose fastball averages 94.6 miles per hour. "I roll around on the ground a lot. I go with the theory that I'm strong enough to throw my velocity. That's not really going to change much. But if I can be healthy, that's key. So I bear crawl, roll around, crab walk, things like that, just to strengthen the shoulder and elbow in weird positions. Because you know you get into weird positions when you pitch. So just stress the body in weird positions within reason. And I'm a big active recovery guy. I like doing the manual resistant shoulder exercises. There are days where you need a day off, and there's days where you need to feel sore, and it's better for you to get out there and kind of lift house and flush it out. Then there's Tigers outfielder Riley Green, who is having the best slugging season of his four-year career by adopting the most ancient of modalities. My number one thing that I did not focus on until this year is sleep," he says. "I don't track it. I take the right supplements to help me sleep better, help me sleep through the night. I mean, I'm trying to get 10, 11, 12 hours of sleep every night. I get sometimes 13. I try to sleep as long as I can. Then it shows the next day. I'm like, wow, I feel great. It has made a difference, that's for sure." One executive tells a story of a young player strapping on a vest that uses a GPS tracker, an accelerometer, and a magnetometer to monitor workload, only to be scolded by a veteran for allowing the club access to such data. "What are you doing? Get that off. Don't be a clown," the veteran said. Such resistance is ebbing from a pulsed electromagnetic field to an old-fashioned shut-eye. More players are embracing more ways of recovery and maintenance. The game is changing. So is the game between the games. The next article is going to be on WNBA wings guard Paige Buchers. And this article is written by Emma Basilieri. Gino Arima's favorite term for Paige Buchers was delusional. The UConn women's basketball coach spent years describing his star player this way. She acted like she could not miss. The Huskies would not lose. No injury or setback or frustration would prove too great. A pair whose relationship was less centered in good-natured ribbing may have settled on a term like confident or self-assured. But for Rimas and Buchers, it was delusional, and the word became one that she carried with her. She will freely admit that she has always operated with a bit of delusion. That's been just as true of Buchers' approach to business. The 23-year-old, now in her first season with the Wings, has long operated as if the commercial opportunities that she wants for herself and for other female athletes should be in realities instead of potential. Maybe one day, hypotheticals, and she's come along at a time when that does not seem nearly as delusional as it may have once been in women's basketball. "She's never made decisions from a point of view of scarcity," says Westerman agent Lindsay Kagawa Colas, who has represented Buchers since her sophomore season at UConn. "This is a business environment of abundance, and she's always functioned that way, even before things were really taking off." Buchers was uniquely positioned to experience that shift. The number one prospect in her class, she was the first high school girl ever featured on the cover of Slam and came to UConn in 2020 with a resume and following that set her up to be the face of the NIL generation. She became the first college athlete in any sport to sign a deal with Gatorade, which she did in 2021. But a series of grueling injuries required Buchers to spend more time off the court than on it over the next few years. In the meantime, women's college basketball was seeing explosive growth, with unprecedented money flooding in, like a new media rights deal with $920 million, alongside the record-breaking play of Caitlin Clark and the remarkable commercial savvy of Angel Reese. Buchers knew what it was like to have been anointed the headliner of her sport, and then she knew what it was like to see that suddenly disappear, and she was not yet 22, all of which helped to underscore some key principles for her. There was room to share both the media spotlight and the commercial opportunities. During her senior season with the Huskies, she made a reported $1.4 million in NIL. She could afford to say no. She could afford to ask for something different, and depending on the context, that could mean asking for either more or less. She could afford to make sure that other voices were heard, and she set her priorities accordingly from college to WNBA, where she was the top pick of the 2025 draft. It's not making decisions with panic about what's going to disappear, Kagawa Kola says. And she understands that's a position of privilege. Because of this time and place, who she is, and what she looks like, and what she represents, she gets it. When Bukers lands a trading card deal, she can require that cards are produced for all of her teammates, too. When she goes on a photo shoot, she can request input over who does the hair, makeup, and styling. When she pours over a new brand deal, she can request that accompanying charitable donations be made. None of these are revolutionary concepts in and of themselves, but female athletes have traditionally found them hard to access. If these ideas are primarily about money and the ability to ask for more of it, they're just as much about power. Kagawa Kolis has represented WNBA players for 20 years, including Diana Taurasi, Maya Moore, and Brittany Griner. She has seen the landscape shift to a point where players can make requests like these and know that they will be taken seriously. Bukers has a healthy appreciation for that. Her game is most often held for its efficiency, but it might be understood better as an attention to detail. It's precisely because Bukers has such a keen understanding of every little movement on the court that she is able to anticipate her opponents so well and select her shots accordingly, which is also a hallmark of how she has approached business opportunities. Bukers has found there is a real power in the details. In a campaign that she did last year for the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, she was filmed dribbling through empty galleries after hours, Viva Daldi playing in the background. Bukers asked to review all of the art that she would be seen in the final video. The camera lingers on the Rothko and the self-portrait of Frida Kahlo. She asks that every member of the glam team be a woman from the Bay Area. She asked to get more details on the museum's free admission program for children. There was no payment for the appearance. Bukers liked thinking of it as a donation to the arts, that she had been asked to promote the exhibit titled Get in the Game, Sports, Art, Culture, was something that would have been unfathomable just a few years ago, for a women's basketball player to be recognizable enough, not just in sports, but culture, to be asked to partner with a museum in a city she had no connection to. That she could afford to make the choice to work for free was even more striking. I hope it's a blueprint for what people who have similar opportunities can think to do, Kagawa Kola says. It's a different kind of ambition. It's a different kind of game. It's about impact, not just dollar value. The next article I'll be reading is Big Fun in Big D. Before the Cowboys, Dallas was home to a one-season not-so-wonder by Mark Bechtel. Dallas football players have always had a reputation for living hard, most notably the 1990s. Cowboys of Michael Irvin and the 60s squad that inspired the film North Dallas 40, largely lost to history, until now at least, thanks to a big mess in Texas, are the exploits of Chubby Grigg, a lineman on the NFL's Dallas Texans, who in December of 1952 ordered 17 grasshoppers in a bar, lost a drinking contest, threw up, and passed out. His teammates had to drag him back to his room in Hershey, PA, on a sled because there had been a blizzard. That paragraph should raise a lot of questions. Grasshoppers? NFL's Dallas Texans? Hershey? Yes, for most of one season, the Texans were an NFL team that played in Dallas, at least until the owners went broke and returned the club to the league, which sent it to finish out the schedule in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The Texans were a colorful bunch, to say the least, and their story is told with skill and flair by David Fleming, one of the best at telling the stories of football historical oddities. It's a hysterical and at times serious, the Texans were playing in the Jim Crow South, after all. Look at life in the NFL before anyone ever thought to call it the No Fun League. The next article I'll be reading is Hot Property. A real estate mogul chats with an NBA star looking to get into the business. Nora Drummond and Don Peebles both know an awful lot about hotels. Drummond stays in too many to count during his NBA career, while Peebles has made millions of dollars developing them. While Drummond, a two-time All-Star center who currently plays for the 76ers, will be back for a 14th season this fall, he's definitely thinking about what he'll do when his career finally comes to an end. He thinks he'd like to get into real estate, so who better to talk to than Peebles, who has been involved in the sector for decades? In 1996, Peebles became the first African American to develop a major hotel when he secured the rights to the Royal Palm in Miami. And 3 years later, he purchased the city's historical bath club after becoming its first black member. The two met in New York City recently for a friendly game of cards and a discussion about business as part of the playbook, a video series created by Sports Illustrated and Entrepreneur. A few highlights of their discussion are below. For the full conversation, visit sportsillustrated.com. Jermond, as we all know, basketball doesn't last forever. And getting into real estate, I'm not very knowledgeable about it yet, which is why this is really dope for me to learn from you. I'm looking forward to really just learning what your journey was like and who Don was before all of this. Peebles, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm a big fan of yours and a big fan of athletics overall because I think it prepares us for leadership. Being an elite athlete and the discipline and the resilience, those skill sets are transferable to business. Jermond, so you're from DC? Peebles. Yes, my mother had me when she was 19 years old. Mother ultimately was the head of the household, and she was the one who had this entrepreneurial dream. From 8 years old, I was aware of real estate. I learned what to do from her, and I learned some things not to do. You know, she came from a different time in the country, and I was looking at it with a fresh set of eyes from a different generation. So I see it as she's the first leg of a relay. I'm the second leg, and I got to open up a lead, and then I'll hand the baton off to my kids, and then they'll run the next leg. You are in the midst of your career. You're at a point now where you're beginning to think about the next chapter. What does that look like? Jermond. So for me, this is 14 seasons in the NBA. And as the years went on, I started to see my peers and people that I came in with start to trickle out. And I'm like, damn, I wonder what these guys are doing. And I started to see that a lot of them are either broke or not doing anything. We always get knocks for doing things outside of our sport. I'll get comments on my page like, oh, stick to basketball. Why this conversation is important is because people need to see that there's more to life than just basketball. So if I can help the next person and let them know that it's okay to do things you love outside of your sport and expand your mind beyond the game, so we don't have the large number of guys that are struggling to find out what to do after basketball's over. Can you explain to me who is Don Peebles without the accolades, without the money? Who are you to the core? Peebles. I'm a person who wants to see a fair society. That's one of the things I like about athletics. On the basketball court, while the game is being played, the team that plays the best is going to win. Simple, right? They can get some bad calls and so forth, but they can't take you off the field. They can't say, hey, you can't come on the field. Or they can't say, you've got to play barefoot. But in other parts of our society, they can. We all have to say that the system's unfair. And I think I'm in a good position to say that because I'm not complaining. I made the system work for me, right? But it's important that we don't forget where we come from and we don't turn our backs on the rest of our society. Jermond, absolutely. The next article is Startup Leagues, written by Sports Illustrated writer ZK. Tech entrepreneur Alex Ohanian started Athlos, an all-women's track event with record-setting prize money, for a pretty simple reason. No one had tried it before. The reason why some of our most impressive generational tech companies have been built is because the founders didn't take the way it's always been done for an answer, said Ohanian, who was a founding investor in NWSL's Angel City FC. Turns out that works really well in sports, too. Beginning as a standalone meet in 2024, Athlos will return this fall before launching a team-based track and field league by next year, organizers say. This event is yet another to try to carve out a niche in the increasingly crowded sports ecosystem. So why have so many popped up over the last 18 months? One reason is athletes have no desire to adhere to the status quo. Unrivaled, a 3-versus-3 basketball league co-founded by Brianna Stewart and Nafisa Khalir emerged to give players the chance to compete domestically instead of going overseas during the WNBA's offseason. The 6-team league's inaugural 9-week season began in January and ended with 11.9 million viewers reached on TNT, True TV, and Max. Other leagues formed to create opportunities for athletes that didn't already exist. League One Volleyball and Major League Volleyball, which recently merged with the Pro Volleyball Federation, touted the sport's massive youth network as a pipeline for both development and viewership. Athletes Unlimited launched a softball league with the backing of Major League Baseball under the leadership of former MLB executive King NG to capitalize upon the sport's vast following and the collegiate level. And then there are those who simply try to innovate upon what already exists, merging a traditional sport with technology. That's the blueprint for TGL, helmed by Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, which recruited the PGA's Tour's best golfers for a team match play format on an indoor simulator. These startup leagues aren't without their difficulties. Last year, four-time Olympic gold medalist sprinter Michael Johnson created Grand Slam Track in an effort to professionalize his sport, but he had to cut the four-meet season short this year, in part because an investor pulled its funding, leaving many athletes unpaid. Johnson is still aiming for the league's return in 26. Some may not last, some may be swallowed up by established leagues, but so long as founders see a way to improve conditions for athletes or reach an underserved audience, such ventures are sure to continue. The next article I'll be reading is College General Managers, written by Sports Illustrated writer BF. The fastest growing title in college sports is one ubiquitous in the pros, general manager. Unlike their NFL or NBA counterparts, a college GM's powers and responsibilities are almost as diverse as the names sporting such a job nowadays. Sanford's Andrew Luck has virtually unprecedented control over the Cardinal football program, while Duke's Rachel Baker, Wright, is immediately involved in every facet of the men's basketball team. From NIL to media coverage, there's a growing cadre of celebrities who've joined the ranks as assistant GMs, too. Their work can include less impact in the day-to-day, but often accompanies a large donation, as is the case with Trae Young, Oklahoma, Stephen Curry, Davidson, and Max Crosby, Eastern Michigan. Dr. Shaquille O'Neal, meanwhile, helps with marketing and player development as GM at Sacramento State. We are at the conclusion of this week's Sports Illustrated program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Ben. Thank you for listening. Have a great week and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.